Welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight's video, I am bringing you four allegedly true, horrifying trail cam stories. You decide. Now let's get spooky. I hope that it was just the wind and wildlife making the unsettling noises outside my secluded cabin. It wasn't. It was Max who reacted to the noises more than I did at first. He was part beagle, part velociraptor, in his mind anyways. But he was a full-on bloodhound when a scent or sound caught his attention. I had only lived at the cabin for a few weeks, hoping for some isolation to finish writing the novel I had been working on for the better part of 5 years. Okay, working on is a bit of an exaggerated way of saying I'd be mentally plotting it out for a good half a decade, but that's just beside the point. Having lived in a fairly bustling apartment building since moving out of my parents' house, it wasn't always easy to stay focused, with nosy neighbors and traffic driving by. That's the very reason I decided to move out to the spot, a good way from the beaten path. Other than some camping trips when I was a kid, I didn't have much experience being surrounded by nature. For the most part, I managed to ignore the sounds of the wind blowing through the branches, or the wildlife scurrying around. Max, however, had not been a fan since we moved in. Most days, he would just grunt or growl as leaves brushed up against the exterior walls and windows. But he grew so much more erratic when the more deliberate-sounding noises began. I don't know if that's the best way to phrase that, but they seemed far less random than the soundtrack of the forest. I began to take things a little more seriously when I was awakened in the middle of the night by my bedroom window cracking from something slamming against it. I practically jumped from my bed, scampering to the window to see what was out there. Max was going completely nuts, barking his furry ass off, with the hair on his back standing upright. He wasn't exactly an intimidating mutt, but the way he growled at the window made me even more unsettled by it. With the moonlight barely cutting through the dense forest, I couldn't make out much of anything. But the spiderwebbed splits across my window had me a little more than rattled, even with that little voice in my head arguing that it was nothing more than a tree branch or something tossed by the wind. Throwing on my robe and muttering curses under my breath, I pulled my flashlight and pistol from my nightstand. I leashed Max to ensure he didn't run off, though he was more of a bark as intimidating as possible while hiding behind me sort of dog. I flipped on the exterior light, hesitantly cracking open the front door, while my faithful companion tucked himself behind my legs, poking his snout between them. Stepping outside, I just stood in the doorway, glancing around the area, and guided my torch from side to side. Sure enough, the wind was quite aggressive, threatening to blow me right out through the entrance, given my shaky and still half-asleep legs. With an exhausted chuckle and wide yawn, I headed back inside, shaking my head at my silliness. Max settled down a bit after taking a look outside, but he still seemed a little on edge. Given that he had been aggressively pulled from his sleep, just as I was, I could only imagine what goes through a dog's mind at such things. I gave him a few treats, leading him back to the bedroom, hopeful that we could both get back to sleep. Before I laid back down, I placed some packaging tape along the cracks in my bedroom window in hopes of preventing them from getting any worse. I knew I'd have to get it fixed soon enough, but I hoped this would work until I had motivation to either fix it myself or call the landlord. For the remainder of the night, every tap against the exterior walls as debris caught the wind sprang my eyelids back open while Max growled from the floor. I even thought I heard some things rolling around inside the cabin, but I just chalked it up to my sleepy imagination running wild, combined with my growing frustration. The next day, I placed a few calls, arranging to have my split glass replaced, as well as getting some of the trees right next to the house removed. Dale, my landlord, didn't sound exactly thrilled about it, but with me being the third tenant in over a year, he couldn't deny that something had to be done. It was at that point when I should have had the sense to ask more questions about who had moved in and back out so swiftly, but the restless night hadn't left me much sense by morning. I was fighting sleep all day, even while the guys Dale had sent out went to work on the window. It would still be a few days before the tree removal team came to check things out, but I went ahead and cut down some of the branches right next to the house. The last thing I wanted was to have to arrange to get some damn window replaced again if that night was as windy as the last. When the noises attempted to interrupt my sleep once more, I ended up choosing the crash on the couch. Yes, I could still hear them from the living room, the scratching at the door and walls, just as much as the tapping on the fresh pane of glass. But with how beat I was by that point, I didn't have nearly as much trouble drifting away, even with Max still occasionally grumbling at the front door. Some days later, as my landlord promised, the tree removal crew arrived. The nights leading up to this had me both frustrated and exhausted, with the regular scuffling and scraping, but I was hopeful this would do the trick. As it turned out, this was just an evaluation and not the actual removal, but I knew nothing about how these things worked. It would be another 2 weeks until they returned to get the job done, but suffice to say, the lack of fulfilling rest had left me quite on edge. It had escalated to the point in which I was certain there was as much movement inside the house as beyond its walls, with how erratic my mental capacity had grown. Each night, I found my eyelids springing back open, due to one slam here or scuffling there, accompanied by growling and barking. I would flip on every light in the cabin, checking every closet and cabinet. I walked around the exterior, my flashlight in one hand and my gun in the other, still finding not the slightest trace of what could be causing the constant ruckus. The restlessness had left my paranoia at an all-time high, to the point I was ready to check into a hotel room for a few nights just to get my mind right. I loved the cabin and its isolation from the otherwise busy world, but I was certain I'd completely lose my crap if this kept up much longer. Still, I wasn't sure if any hotel would allow Max to stay. I don't have much experience with those things either, and I wasn't about to leave him alone at the cabin for an extended period. Ultimately, I chose to stick it out and hope for the best. I was beyond relieved when the crew arrived to finally get rid of the trees alongside the walls of the cabin. The process didn't take nearly as long as I had expected, but Max was going apeshit the entire time. After a long day of growling and barking at the door and walls, the little guy passed out before I did. Before I crashed for the night, my body weary and my mind cluttered from the weeks of broken sleep, I just stood in the middle of the living room for a time, breathing in the blissful silence. Everything was so wonderfully quiet when I finally plopped onto my bed, my senses fading into the black within seconds. For the first few hours, I experienced the best sleep I had in possibly my entire adult life. That was, of course, until my dog going completely nuts again, pulling me swiftly back to the world around me. It wasn't rustling or scraping that I heard, aside from the howling Max, but what sounded like the moaning of a wounded animal. It was a sound that almost inspired my guts to churn a gargled, vibrating wail of agony. Again, I peered through my bedroom window, unable to make out anything through the darkness. Whatever I could hear, though, while I attempted to silence my dog to the best of my ability, was what sounded like something being dragged across the ground, possibly only feet beyond the window. Once more, I repeated the process that almost became a nightly ritual by this point, flipping on the exterior lights with my gun, flashlight, and leashed Max. Not only was there a gentle breeze outside, barely causing the dead leaves skittering across the ground to stir, but it was almost eerily silent. Whether it had been a wounded animal or something else entirely, it would seem that the lights beaming from the cabin inspired it to either run off or hide quietly. Whatever the case, my still growling dog and my nerves being shot from exhaustion, I was honestly feeling quite uneasy at the time. I closed and locked the door, leaving the porch light burning brightly. Feeling a little more creeped out, the little voice in the back of my mind begging me not to investigate the area this time, I chose to leave it at that for the now. The next day, after managing to toss and turn my way back to sleep for a few more hours at least, I took a look around outside under the hopeful safety of the sunlight. I saw no sign of anything having been wounded or dragged across the scattering leaves. There was no indication of anything out of the ordinary, nothing that raised any red flags to me anyway. I didn't exactly spend much time on the small deck or gazing into the woods, other than to enjoy the occasional blunt to get the creative juices flowing. But nothing appeared out of the ordinary. Regardless of finding no evidence to support my growing paranoia, the relentlessness, now that's a mouthful, I needed some answers. Or at least proof that Max and I weren't collectively going insane. After a quick drive in the town to pick up supplies, as well as some lunch, I arrived back at the cabin with two trail cameras, a new tablet, a case of beer, and a bag load of fast food. Once mine and my faithful companion had filled our grumbling bellies, I got to work setting things up. I mounted the cameras outside, one right out in front of the house between the front door and my bedroom window looking out, and the other close to the tree line aimed back at the cabin. I'd considered investing in a few more cameras, placing one around each side of the building as well as inside. But I had already forked out more cash than I needed to in my efforts to set my mind at ease. The sun was going down as I finished setting everything up, accompanied by droplets of rain trickling upon the leaves scattered across the forest floor. It was at that point, as the loud clap of thunder inspired the drizzle to transform into a veritable monsoon, that things really occurred to me. The first was that I didn't even think to check if the cameras were water resistant, and the tutorial videos I looked up didn't get into that aspect of them. But I hoped for the best, as they were designed for being out in the elements. The second, something that inspired a grateful sigh, almost releasing the tension in my neck, was that the ambient sounds of the storm should provide the blissful lullaby I so desperately needed. Not only that, but perhaps the rain would at least temporarily halt any late-night shenanigans beyond my bedroom window. With the storm raging on, I felt more relaxed than I had in weeks. While I was mentally and physically exhausted, I couldn't resist taking advantage of the weather. I dug out my baggie of emergency, herbal creative juices stimulants, rolled two joints, placed three chilled beers in my travel cooler, and headed out to the covered rear deck. Max wasn't the biggest fan of thunder, but I left the back door open, just in case he wanted to come out and join me. He had never been one to attempt to run off, but he would often hang out with me at times like these. Well, when it wasn't pouring outside anyways. Between my head growing blissfully light and foggy, and the glorious soundtrack of the storm, I'm not sure when I nodded off on that lounge chair, nor what time it was when the aggravated barking of my dog pulled my senses back to the world around me. My mind instantly collided with reality, while I almost busted my ass as I leapt to my feet. At first, with the back door still being ajar, I worried that Max had indeed scampered away. But when I sprinted into the house on my still drowsy legs to see him growling and scratching at the front door, I was quite unnerved, to say the least. I couldn't convince him to settle down or back away from the entrance to the cabin, no matter what I tried. I screamed his name, petted the raised fur on his back, and even shook his bag of treats, but he wouldn't budge. After a solid hour, he finally began to calm down, but still occasionally grumbled, staring knives at the door. I went ahead and popped open another beer after bringing the cooler inside and locking up for the night, grabbing my tablet to see if the cameras may have picked up whatever had Max so spooked. Given that the storm was still going strong, not quite as violently as it was when I passed out, but still showing no signs of dwindling, I couldn't make out much of anything from the camera by the tree line. The other one, however, the one looking out from the base of the cabin, appeared to have been completely snuffed out. When I went back through the footage from before it went dark, I felt my already shaky legs attempting to give out from beneath me. Some 20 or 30 minutes before my dog awakened me from my sleep, it looked like some sort of slender, hunched-over figure was outside, steadily approaching the house. All I could see was the darkened outline of the forest, in between the stabs of lightning, making it look like an eerie, old, stop-motion video. The shadowed figure had been moving closer with every flash. With another blink of light, revealing the silhouette only feet from the camera, the next showed only the vacant forest. One final stab of lightning presented me with the last image the camera captured. A pure white, almost translucent and bloodshot eye gazing directly into the lens. I swear, it felt like it was glaring right through my eyes and into the squishy center of my brain for minutes in that brief flash of light. When the video went completely black, revealing neither the shadowed woods nor whatever peered into the lens, I dropped to the floor, allowing the tablet to slip from my fingers. Max came up beside me, resting his paws on my chest and licked my face, easily reading my shaken state. My mind was reeling, my heart racing with every disturbing scenario that flooded my thoughts. Whatever it was that put an end to the footage clearly had some sort of intelligence, enough to know it was being watched anyways. With the bizarre nature of the video blinking from dark to brief flashes of light, I couldn't tell exactly how it moved once I finally got up the nerve to rewatch it. It looked to be somewhat human in its appearance, but its stature was far more primal and animalistic. Perhaps this was not the best scenario for a more imaginative mind, thrusting thoughts of anything from cryptids to wayward aliens against the forefront of my brain, but I knew I had to get a handle on myself. One thing was certain, though. I would not be sleeping again anytime soon, not in this cabin, not until I had some answers. Once I managed to regulate my breathing and crazy thoughts, I called the police. I wasn't about to investigate this one alone, even with only the sounds of the dwindling storm beyond the walls. Max was still acting uneasy, stealing glances at the door on occasion, but was no longer growling or barking. With it being close to 5 in the morning at this point, the 911 operator seemed reluctant to send anyone out at first, recommending that I wait until sunup. After I described what I saw in the footage, though, he assured me that a squad car would be here within the hour. A good 2 hours later, as the sun began to rise, I heard the car pulling up. Between the rain still coming down quite heavily, and the world beyond these walls no longer cloaked in darkness, I was fairly certain that they wouldn't find anything. The officers were friendly enough, while obviously irritated for having to come out here at this hour. They walked around the cabin for a while after I showed them the unsettling footage, but they didn't find anything more than a damaged camera. It looked as though it had been nailed to a baseball bat, the entire casing split in multiple places, and the screen was shattered. Officer Grange, the taller and younger of the two, appeared a little more unnerved by both the damage to the trail cam and the silhouette figure on the video. He assured me there was no trace of anything to worry about in the vicinity of the cabin, or any sign of someone attempting to break in. I told him about the unsettling noises over the previous weeks, but he just shrugged those off. He said that a forest at night can produce a wealth of eerie sounds between the wind and the wildlife, suggesting that I was simply not used to my surroundings yet. Given that I was accustomed to a more populated area, I couldn't deny that he was likely right. But it didn't make me feel any more at ease with my current situation. Once they headed out, certain that whatever had smashed my camera was likely long gone by now, I locked up and fell into my bed. With how exhausted my body and mind were by this point, I passed right out, even with my thoughts still all over the place. The following morning, I made a trip in the town to replace the broken camera, along with a small cage to hopefully protect it from further attacks. When I returned to the cabin to find the door open and no trace of Max, I felt my heart practically leap into my throat. I ran inside, barely registering the split wood around where the doorknob used to be, calling out for my dog. Without the slightest whine or moan replying back to me, I sprinted back outside, practically screaming the name of my faithful companion. Still nothing. Not as much as the rustling of the dried leaves or scampering squirrels. Before I headed back into the cabin, trying to figure out if I should call the authorities again, I inspected the one remaining camera mounted by the tree line. To my surprise, it still had not suffered the same fate as its sibling, and I hoped that it would reveal what went on over my brief trip in the town. Fighting to convince my near-spasming fingers to obey my commands, as they trembled against the screen of my tablet, I finally managed to cue the most recent footage. I watched on as my truck pulled away, the echoing sounds of Max barking his pleas to not be left alone in the background. With my chaos-fueled thoughts, his bargaining yelps inspired a sensation of guilt, driving a series of nails into my chest. As the video progressed, showing nothing more than the wind stirring the leaves, I managed to regulate my breathing and racing heart, something that doesn't last for long. As the barking began to settle down, Max having finally accepted my departure, the next few minutes passed by uneventfully. That was until the barking not only resumed, but grew more frantic than before. It was no longer than hopeless yelps of a dear friend, upset that his roommate had ditched them, but the frenzied and borderline manic howls of anger and fear. It took me a moment to register what was happening as my eyes panned across the screen. But when I focused on the ground, maybe 15 to 20 feet from the patio, where the forest floor appeared to be swelling beneath the leaves, I could almost feel my heartbeat stop cold. I had been pacing back and forth with my device clenched between both hands. But when a slender and bony hand breached the ground, like the undead rising from its grave, I found myself stumbling in search of the closest chair. I fell onto the plush, cushioned seat of my recliner, my jaw unhinging at the sight of the skeletal figure as it appeared to be birthed by the dirt and grass. Max was wailing even louder as I whispered words of denial to the imagery before me. Long, matted, and stringy hair fell upon the bony shoulders of this hauntingly slender man as he approached the door, dragging his bare feet across the ground like a pouting child. He was wearing only torn and stained jeans that hung to his scrawny frame, as though there were no legs within them. Stopping short, only a feet or two from the door, he tilted his head to the ground, his hair peeling away from the shoulders as he hunched over. Crouching down, almost to a sitting position, he raised back up with something in his hand, resuming skidding his heels closer to the door. The footage was somewhat grainy, making it difficult to make out what he held. But he raised it above his head, and I could see the huge shape of the hefty rock before he slammed it down upon the knob, protruding from the door. Over and over again, he crashed the large stone against the knob until it tore away from the door, falling to the wooden deck below. He did not enter, only stood before the entryway as it creaked open ever so slightly. With Max barking all the more aggressively, neither the one before nor the one behind the door showed any motivation to pass through. It felt as though there was a silent staring match going on, both participants daring each other to make the first move. When the slender figure began to back away, turning slowly with his head still tilted, revealing only that matted hair and emaciated chest, I tried desperately to release the breath I was holding. He showed no haste in his movements as he returned to the spot from which he had exited the forest floor. Lowering himself to his knees, he leaned over, with his arms outstretched, slowly slithering into the earth like a creeping snake. I watched on in horror until the ground had swallowed him whole, leaving barely a trace of his arrival. I still gazed on, slack-jawed and trembling, zoned in on the patch of dirt and dead leaves, just waiting for the figure to spring back out. It wasn't until the unyielding barks grew a little louder when I noticed the door to the cabin creaking open, with a curious Max peeking his snout across the threshold. I shouted at my tablet, begging my faithful hound to stay, my heart threatening to tear itself in two. I continued my pointless bargaining as my dog strolled out onto the front deck, sniffing the wooden planks in between his barks. He still sounded agitated, but more focused on his investigation, edging closer to the spot from which the figure had both appeared and vanished. I knew what was coming as Max stopped in place, brushing the leaves with the tip of his nose. But when that skeletal hand sprang from the earth, snatching him by the collar, a muffled howl was all he was able to let loose before he was pulled into the earth. Momentarily paralyzed by the events I had just witnessed, I just sat there, my flesh spasming from head to toe. Snapping myself back to reality, I jumped to my feet, running to my bedroom to grab my gun and tossing my tablet onto the bed. I pulled it from my nightstand with one hand, dialing 911 with the other. The operator told me to stay put until a squad car would arrive, but my thoughts were so frantic by this point, I had no idea what to do. I just paced back and forth with the woman on the other end of the line, making her best attempts to calm me down. I just about convinced myself to take a seat and wait for the police to arrive when I grew aware of a scuffling sound beyond the splayed open front door. Standing at the entrance to my bedroom, the voice of the operator fading into an echo behind my fear, I backed into the room, closing and locking the door behind me. I cut my eyes to the gun in my hand, to the window of my bedroom, and to the tablet, resting face down on the bed. I picked it up, my violently trembling fingers once more battling to navigate the touchscreen, pulling up the ongoing footage from my trail cam mounted on the tree line. He was just standing there, only feet from the front door again, seemingly glaring at the entrance. I whispered this to the 911 operator while she demanded that I remained in place until the officers arrive. But when I heard the creaks of the floorboards of the front deck and saw that haunting figure on the screen stalking closer by the second, my rational mind was completely muted by my fear. I dropped my phone as I charged the door to my bedroom, throwing it open to see the pale, wrinkled flesh and skeletal frame standing on the threshold. The stringy gray and muddy hair only parted enough to reveal that pure white and bloodshot eye gazing into mine. But that haunting gaze almost froze me in place. As he took one more step, crossing from the outside world into the one within these wooden walls, I snapped out of my paralyzed trance, holding my gun outstretched. "I'll do it," I said, the cold metal shivering in my hand. The man only staggered closer, still gazing into my fracturing mind. "I'll frickin' shoot, I swear to—" As his casual saunter transformed into a run, charging right at me, I pulled the trigger. With my shuddering extremities and almost crippling fear, I can't honestly say if I meant to fire that bullet into the wall or if my aim was dramatically altered at the time. But when my pistol discharged, the man instantly turned, sprinting back through the door. I ran after him, hoping that I could stop him before he dove back beneath the earth, but he didn't stop. By the time I reached the tree line, my sides splitting from the hasted sprint, I could only make out his silhouette while he darted between the trees ahead. Moments later, while I stood in that same spot, my heart still racing, I heard the sirens drawing closer. Even with my thoughts all over the place, I knew it would not be the best idea to greet the officers with a gun in my hand, so I headed back into the cabin and set it down before walking back outside. The two cars pulled up, one of which contained the two officers from before. If nothing else, they saved me from having to explain the entire story again. I did feel a little apprehensive about my having gone against the recommendation of the operator charging out with my gun in hand, but Officer Grange said he would have likely done the same. It was honestly quite impressive how quickly the four got to work on investigating the scene. It didn't take long to uncover the truth behind the man's appearance from beneath the ground either, peeling open the well-camouflaged flap that blended seamlessly with the surrounding terrain. While they would not allow me to descend with them into the underground structure, what they did reveal to me about it may haunt me for the remainder of my days. The two who climbed down there were pale and shaken by the time they came back up, one of them retched across the leaves. With the scent emitting from below, my guts almost rebelled as well, so I could only imagine how much more potent it was inside. Without being too descriptive, they told me about the scattered bones, traces of viscera, gore, and human waste all over the sizable structure. The underground dwelling, which was only one wide but well-furnished room, reached under the cabin itself. Though Officer Grange told me there didn't appear to be any trap doors or hidden entrance into the house, it still left me horrified, knowing that this stranger had been right beneath me this whole time. It would appear that this man had been living there for quite some time, feeding off the wildlife he dragged into his domain. They found Max, unconscious but still rasping on to life, my heart breaking as they carried him out. He was in bad shape, with multiple oozing wounds that looked to have been made by human teeth. Did this man devour these poor creatures raw, feasting on their flesh while they still fought to survive? How could he keep them from fighting back while he ate them alive? Would I ever be able to get this imagery out of my head? Within the day, more vehicles showed up, sealing off the area to fully investigate everything. I would have to relocate while this was going on, but I was not planning to stay there either way. Suffice it to say, I had lost my desire to live out in the middle of nowhere. I am very happy to report that Max recovered from his many brutal injuries. He has a few limitations, a limp on his right foreleg, and he's not quite as sprightly as he used to be. But I can only imagine how much an experience like this can traumatize an innocent dog. He's slowly coming back to himself, and I make sure to let him know every day how grateful I am that he survived this nightmare. It's been some months since I moved away from that cabin, having relocated to a well-populated suburban street. Yes, I'm still not a fan of being surrounded by people coming and going, but I find a certain degree of peace in the sounds of garage doors opening, cars driving by, and children playing outdoors. At least I know where those noises are coming from. They never turned up anything on the man who lived beneath the ground, just outside that cabin in the woods. They did, however, discover that not all the bones belonged to animals. I can't help but wonder if the previous residents of that little house did indeed move away, or if they lived out their remainder of their life in that forest after all. Somehow, I have a feeling that no matter what happened that day, I would have been vacating the cabin one way or another. Yeah, I think I could get used to the life of a suburbanite. When I was growing up, my dad would take my older brother Johnny and I on trips up the Louisiana Bayou to go hunting and fishing every summer. Our dad started the tradition when we were little kids, and it was always the highlight of each summer. As time went on, Johnny and I grew older, schedules conflicted, and we missed a year. Then another. We each started doing our own thing. That is until earlier this year, when our dad passed away. Johnny called me up and suggested that we go on another weekend fishing trip in honor of our dad. I agreed immediately and began packing my things. My fishing gear, some trail cameras, and a bow for hunting game. We set off early Friday afternoon when the sun was still high in the sky. I don't know how much experience you have with the Louisiana Bayou, but it's basically just a slow-moving swamp. The bayou can get boggy and smelly, but you'll be hard-pressed to find a place with more fish. We loaded our stuff into the boat and headed deep into the muck. Soon we were far from civilization, but we pressed on ahead, traveling miles into the wilderness. That was the entire point of these trips, after all. To get away, get into nature, and clear our heads. I was glad to be leaving everything behind for a few days. After a few hours of riding, we reached the spot we had picked out. Every summer, our dad would pick a new branch of the Delta to explore. So this year, we'd done the same. There was something exhilarating about the idea that you are the first to explore a place. We pulled our boat onto the shore and set up a few trail cameras to detect motion. We had used them to see if the game trails around were still used by deer. Me and Johnny found a couple good fishing spots and managed to reel in a few fish. The day passed and the sun started to lower in the sky. I just pulled my third fish in when Johnny called out to me. I looked up to see him pointing across the river. "Look at that," he said. "Oh, you know we have to go check that out," Johnny said. I was worried for a minute, but the house was clearly abandoned and empty. On top of that, we were dozens of miles from the nearest person who might care. We ran back to our boat and used it to cross the river, walking through the house. It looked like it had been abandoned for about a decade, just long enough for all the wood to be warped and rotted, but not long enough to start falling over. The house was full of stuff. Even plates and food were left out on the counter. "Looks like whoever was living here didn't care about leaving anything behind," I said. Then I turned to look into the living room. Someone had scratched huge letters into the wall above the couch. "These are his woods." "These are his woods?" Johnny asked. "Who is he?" I told him I don't know. Something about the letters unsettled me. The way they were written as if in a rush, like someone was in a hurry to scrawl them out. I looked through the house windows out at the woods, looking for I don't know what. "Let's get out of here, man," I said. We left the house and crossed back over the river to our camp. Camping in a tent in the marshy bayou is a bad idea, so our dad had always taught us to use hammocks when we're out there. I climbed up a tree and strung my hammock about 10 feet off the ground, and Johnny did the same to a pair of trees close by. After that, we found a solid piece of ground, started a fire, and cooked some of the fish. I still couldn't shake the uneasy feeling I had gotten from the house. It just didn't make sense. And it didn't seem like the kind of thing a person did as a prank. I felt a little better as I ate my food. It was probably all in my head anyways. Me and Johnny told stories about our dad and past trips, ate our fish, and caught up with each other. It had been a while since we had done something like this. By the time it got dark, I was more than ready to crash. I climbed the tree and into my hammock. Soon, I had fallen fast asleep. It was some time later, I don't exactly know how long, that I was woken up by the sound of something rustling through our things down below me. At first, I thought it was Johnny grabbing something, but no, there was another sound. The best way I could describe it is like this. Start breathing in and slowly close your windpipe. When it's almost closed, it makes a strange croaking noise. That's what I heard from below us. I froze in my hammock, but turned my head to the side, looking towards where Johnny was hanging. He was staring at me, an expression of confusion and fear on his face. I put my fingers to my lips and he nodded. The croaking sound continued, punctuated by crashing noises as this thing below us rooted through all our stuff. After what seemed like an eternity, I heard the sound of it stalking off into the woods. We both waited for a long time before finally calling out. "What was that?" I whispered. "A bear, maybe?" Johnny said. I shook my head and looked over my hammock down at the ground. Johnny did the same, but it was too dark to see any details. "Let's just get some sleep and we'll deal with it tomorrow," I said. Johnny nodded reluctantly, then turned over in his hammock. I laid in my hammock, heart racing for the next half hour. I drifted in and out of sleep until I saw the sky start to lighten up from the rays of the sun. I climbed down from my hammock to see our campsite had been completely destroyed. Our cooler of fish was torn open, our gear thrown all over the place, and our boat had been torn from its mooring and flipped upside down. My jaw dropped at that. The boat together with its engine had to weigh several hundred pounds. Johnny climbed down from his tree and saw the boat and torn rope. "A bear did that?" I asked. "Well, I mean, what else could it be?" he said. "I don't know," I replied. "But I never heard of a bear make the noise we heard last night." We did our best to clean up the area. We thought about calling off the trip, but we figured as long as we were better about keeping our food sealed up, we'd probably be fine. We spent the rest of the day trying to relax. We fished, bow hunted some squirrels, and soon the night's events seemed like nothing more than a hazy memory. Still, when I saw the sun going down, I felt my stomach tighten. As we made our way back towards camp, I grabbed one of the trail cams we had set up. "Why are you bringing that?" Johnny asked. "So that when we're eaten by bears, we'll have at least some footage to sell to the news," I said. I set up the trail cams towards the trees where our hammocks were strung up. We decided to store our food up in a place further inland, setting it away from our hammocks just in case that thing came back. We ate some jerky, talked for a bit, then crawled into our sleeping bags. I tried to fall asleep, but ended up spending a few hours staring up at the stars through the leaves. I knew it was unlikely that the creature would come back, but something about that sound it was making, it gnawed at my mind. It didn't sound like anything I'd heard from an animal before. I must have nodded off at some point, because I was woken up to the sound of something messing through our things at the place where we had left them. Our stuff was probably 100 feet away, but in Louisiana, that meant it was still completely hidden by leaves. The same croaking sound from before echoed from the area. I got on all fours in my hammock to try and catch a view of the area. Then I felt my right hand slip on the fabric, but ended up losing my balance and falling out of my hammock the 10 feet to the marshy ground. I hit the ground hard. The mud absorbed most of my fall, so I only had the wind knocked out of me. I laid in the muck, just trying to breathe. Then I heard the sound of something crashing through the forest. It was coming towards me. Something huge stopped just above my head, and I heard it standing there making its croaking noise. Then a light flashed out as the trail camera was activated by the motion and took a picture. Whatever the thing was, made a terrible groaning noise at the light and ran off into the woods. I stayed laying in the muck for a long, long time, until the only thing I could hear was the normal sounds of the bayou at night. When I got a hold of myself, I crawled back into my hammock. I looked over at Johnny and saw him staring at me with a hand over his mouth.
It looked like a goat, he said. I swear, it looked like a huge goat person.
I laid there in my muddy, wet clothes until the dawn broke. We threw the stuff into the boat without talking much and set off for home. My ribs were tender, but not broken. It was only when I got home and checked the trail camera that I saw the picture it took while I was laying in the mud. I have no idea what this thing could be. But if I find out anything else, I'll update you all here. I don't know what to do about my situation, and I'm terrified to fall asleep. Any ideas from you guys would be appreciated. Let me start at the beginning. I live alone in a small town in the U.S. Earlier this year, I moved into my current house. It's located at the edge of a long dirt road and surrounded by a few acres of grassland. That's one of the main reasons I moved here, to get away from the bustle of the city. Earlier this week, I woke up to find a window open, a window that I was absolutely sure I had left closed. If that had been the one thing, I might have thought the window had just fallen open. But over the course of the day, I found bizarre things in my house, things that I don't understand. Things like my remote control was flipped inside out on the coffee table, or several light switches were halfway between the on and off positions. Things that I was only half sure I hadn't done.
I got paranoid thinking there may have been a person in my house. So I set up a security system consisting of microphones throughout my house. They were set up to record audio when they detected a new noise. A few nights passed with me checking the recordings periodically. Things went back to normal soon after. I had almost forgotten the incident with the window when I found my system had saved a recording around 4 a.m. Here's what was recorded. It sounded like heavy breathing. When I checked which microphone picked it up, I found that it was picked up by the microphone in my bedroom. At this point, I started getting freaked out. I figured it was possible that I had just been breathing heavily that night, but the system hadn't picked up anything like that for several nights of recording before that. On top of that, the weird things started back up again. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and hear shuffling outside. I found a deer carcass on the ground outside my driveway. One morning, I woke up to find half of my food falling out of my cabinets. It was getting to me. I didn't know what to do to stop it. On top of everything else, I couldn't even tell myself I wasn't crazy. Maybe a deer just happened to die in front of my house. Maybe my security system was just recording my heavy breathing. Maybe a box of cereal fell and knocked out some of my food onto the floor. And maybe they weren't. I decided to upgrade my security system. If there was something in my house, I wanted to know. I bought several trail cams that turned themselves on whenever they detected motion and installed them throughout my house. I also installed one into my headboard above my bed. I woke up the next morning with a sinking feeling in my stomach. My room was absolutely trashed, my clothing thrown around, and my dresser laying on its side. And I slid the SD card in. The trail cam had only captured a few seconds of footage. I left the house immediately. And I'm staying with a friend. But I'm worried about whatever that thing is will follow me. Do I call the police? Move? What is this thing? I purchased a hunting property in Southern Maryland a few years ago. It's a decent chunk of land, over 400 acres, almost entirely wooded. Its history is dated back all the way to the 1660s, when it was deeded to some English military colonel. It had an old plantation-style house built in the 1870s. We were told the original house had burnt down. It has a family cemetery with gravestones that go back to the 1780s. And a lot of overgrown boxwood bushes, the ones you prune into shapes. The place did seem a little creepy right off the bat, but I've always been a pragmatic kind of person. I didn't give stuff like that a second thought. The land had been leased by a hunting club for the past 20 or so years. All the stands were set up and trails were already established. It was a perfect fit for us. At one point, I made an offhanded joke to the hunting club guy about the haunted house. It really does look like one. He said something along the lines of, "Yeah, this place will make your hair stand up sometimes." He seemed surprisingly serious. I thought he was going to make a joke back about it. Again, didn't make much of it, but it stuck out in my mind. The house was unlivable at the time of purchase, so we were commuting back and forth from a friend's anytime we needed to be down there to get work done. I had never been there at night by the time deer season came around. Me and four other guys went open day for rifle. We went to get to our stands pretty early when it's still dark. We each go alone to different stands at different areas. First light is usually around 6:15, so we got there around 5:15. It's about a 15-minute hike through the woods to the stand I was at. Opening day, no issues. Nothing weird happened. Kind of a slow morning. Saw a couple of deer, but nothing worth taking. Second day, same schedule. Got there at 5:15 and started my hike out. Part of this hike is on a long and straight logging path. Once I got to this logging path, I started to get the sense that someone was watching me. The feeling came out of nowhere. I've hunted since I was a kid, and have had deer snort and stomp at me in the dark. I know the wildlife is always watching, but this felt very different. I shined my flashlight through the trees in all directions. Didn't see anything, and just chalked it up to being paranoid because of what the hunting club guy said. It was an intense feeling. I got to my stand, which is what we call a ladder stand. It's basically a ladder going up a tree with a seat at the top. Got situated and was looking down at my phone since it was still dark. Out of the top of my vision, I saw a bright light. Looking up really quick, it was a bluish-white glow that lasted about 2 seconds at about 150 to 200 yards straight out ahead. My adrenaline was pumping like crazy. I thought to myself, what the heck was that? The next closest hunter was probably close to 500 yards away to my left. There's no way I could have even seen his light through the trees. I kept my stare at that same spot for what felt like forever, but never saw it again. I ended up trying to just justify it in my head as either like seeing stars or maybe a hallucination of some sort. Around 9 or 10 a.m., I got down and walked in that general direction to see if I could see anything really quick, but nothing was there. We are on private land. There's no one else out here. Two guys got deer that morning. I did not. Decided not to mention the light to anyone. It was probably just in my head anyways. Day 3. We switched up who went to which stand since the two guys who got deer weren't there. One of the guys did end up going to the stand I was at. Let's call him John. The day went on as normal, but was another bummer. None of us saw anything worth taking. John didn't mention anything out of the ordinary, and by that point I was starting to forget about the light and didn't care anymore. Day 4 was our last day, and was another normal day, but thankfully, I had finally gotten my deer. A small 7-point, but I was happy. John ended up taking a spike, small buck, for the meat, and the other guy decided to not take anything. We went our separate ways. A couple weeks later, I decided to put up some trail cams and sent out a text to the group with the joke about maybe catching the old colonel wandering around. That's when I got a call from John, and he told me that he forgot to tell me that he saw lights in the woods at the same stand I did. My heart dropped. I said, "Dude, you're not going to believe this, but I saw the same thing." I asked him what color was it and in which direction. He said it was like a bright blue or white, straight out. He said it was quick, on and off, so he couldn't say exactly. I thought for sure at that point that this place was haunted, but had to get out of there. I immediately drove down and checked out the area in front of that stand. After about 15 minutes of walking around in the vicinity of where I thought that light was, I found an old ladder stand. Looked like it had been there for a long time, maybe 5-10 years. Still could be used, but it wouldn't be safe. We had a poacher on the property. I called the game warden, but she said unless I caught the guy, there was nothing they could do. Just told me to take the old stand down, which I did. I set up cameras in that area and never saw anybody. I wish I'd told John about the light. I still feel like an ass. It was an incredibly dangerous situation for both of us. Thankfully, nothing bad happened. It's been about 3 years since then, and haven't had any issues. Have done a lot of walking, looking for old stands, and I actually have found a couple more I took down. I tell everyone now who hunts here to tell me if they see anything out of the ordinary.